Hola, you are listening to Las Chicas del Crime, a podcast where tres amigas sit down and talk all true crime for Hispanic and American crimes.
All right, we here. We live, baby.
We bike.
Hello, we done ate. We done drink our Red Bull. We are here.
And a monster.
Yeah, shout out to Saucing Wings in Tampa. That's SAUCINWINGS.
Yeah, check them out if you're in Tampa.
Super good, great prices. Food is definitely worth what you pay for.
Yeah, it's amazing, fresh.
Oh,
yeah.
So good.
The literally, mac and cheese.
Yeah. Oh, the mac and cheese. Let's do that.
The loaded mac and cheese. Also, highly recommend the guava barbecue fries. Do not sleep on the name of the sauce.
But just guava. I mean, you should not. I'm a guava person, so I feel like you should not sleep on guava. A lot of people aren't a guava person.
A lot of people don't like it, but if you I recommend it. Okay?
I recommend it.
Let them know Las Chicas sent you.
Yes, do let them know Las Chicas at Crime sent you over.
Okay. Ooh. Shout out. Yeah, I already thought about it. Shout out to our friend, our listener.
Dang, we didn't get the name of the co-partner that was Chris. There today.
I looked them up.
That's the other guy, Chris?
Yeah, that's
okay,
the other
so David
Chris.
And Chris. So I was half wrong.
You're half right.
Earlier, I was telling Austin when we did the live, I was like, oh, I think his name is Chris. And I go and I'm like, it was David. But Chris is the other guy.
Chris
so
is
look.
The other guy. He's actually like a award winning chef and stuff. I looked up on, I kind of stopped. I'm sorry. But I want to know who's making my food. So
yeah,
shout out to you, man. Shout out to you and all your hard work. Well, thanks for fueling this episode. So today, I, Jennifer, will talk to y'all about none other than the Jerry Curl Gang.
Not the yes.
You heard it right. Jerry Curl, like the hairstyle, and a gang, like a street gang. Yes, Jerry Curl Gang.
Yes.
They were alive and causing havoc about the late 80s and early 90s in Manhattan, New York. None other than my favorite city ever. And they were the earliest, most violent, and best branded Dominican gang of New York, meaning they basically were the ones that started the Dominican emphasis on Dominican gangs, not gangs, just Dominican gangs.
Okay. You have everyone didn't start the gangs.
Yeah, I just want to clarify that because New York has a very large history of gang affiliations and stuff. So I'm just clarifying on the Dominican line of gangs. The Jerry Curls were basically the CEOs. So, and the founders. The gang consisted of Rafael Martinez and his four brothers, Lorenzo, Julian, Daniel, and Caesar.
Okay.
And the uncle, some uncle of theirs, and 20 other plus members. Also, fair warning, though, the research and information on this is super limited just because it just took place so long ago, so I couldn't really find a lot, but shout out to the sources that I did find, and I will link them down below.
Okay.
So it was said that the Jerry Curls, you know, were reigning over Manhattan. They were specifically involved in cocaine trade. They were known for driving gold-painted cars and had, of course, the nice big froofy Jerry Curls.
Okay.
And they, like everybody said, that you could just see them coming. That you just knew they were coming.
I actually, my favorite rapper ever had a Jerry Curl. And that was Eazy-E, who made Rest in Peace.
R.I.P. Boo.
Yes.
Sure enough. I mean, he definitely was one of the very few or very first guys to pave the way for the Jerry Curl hairstyle to begin with as well. So.
Love that for the gangbangers.
Okay.
love
and if
it.
You don't know who Eazy-E is,
DM
me and I will give you the rundown on my boo.
Yeah, he was pretty dope and unfortunately went out the very wrong way, but fuck Suge Knight. Anyways, we're not here for that. You know what though? We should talk about that one day.
We should talk about fucking Suge Knight because catch me outside. How about that?
As you should be.
Yes. So, long time coming.
Facts, sir. So the Jerry Curl gangs were located in an apartment building off of 550 West 157th Street. It was a 10-story building off of East of Broadway. And if you're not familiar with this area, it is a very prominent area for a lot of Dominicans, hence why they were there, lived there. They had set up shop in two of the buildings and the apartments. So basically, they basically on the block at this point. Wow. The apartments were actually filled with like contraptions and like booby traps to avoid, you know, like the neighborhood thugs and all that stuff to come in and take all their shit. Because, you know, living in New York, if people know that you push in, you're going to be a target.
You become a target real quick.
Right, right. So to avoid like the people off the streets to come and like take their stuff, they actually concealed everything with trapdoors. They were hiding stashes of guns, drugs and money, of course.
Of course.
And basically what the crappy part about this that, and they set up in the building was is that there's other people that lived in these buildings. So the traps that they set up were traps that other people had to go through as well. Like, they had this elevator that they used and they kind of rigged it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Well, people had to use the same elevator to get up to their apartment. So they had to actually unrig the elevator to be able to go up to their apartment. But no one ever complained to them because they knew that it was a fucking game. Anger. So
yeah.
It's either you deal with it or...
Yeah, you get fucked up. You know what
I'm saying? She said,
I'm in the ghetto. Ratatata.
So the residents would recall that it was like an open house. The gang was basically like the doorman of the building. And in order to get in and out, you kind of had to pass through them somewhere or the other. But it's actually said that, you know, there's some people from the neighborhood that actually gave their own opinions and testimonies about the Jerry Curl gang. And here's a few things of what they said, which this first one, yo, when I read this, I literally cried laughing because I'm like, what are the odds? So the girlfriend of the leader, Rafael Martinez, made fun of him one day for his own limp. Oh, and God. You know how he responded to her? He shot her in the kneecap, y'all.
Oh my God.
He said,
I'm going to give
his own girlfriend in the kneecap.
I'm going to give you a limp.
Oh,
okay.
Jesus.
You make fun of my limp. Now you limp too.
We both limp.
Okay.
Limpies.
We limpies together. Ugh. So that's number one. So
talk about John, Bonnie and Clyde.
Okay. So that's my first testimony on how they work, just to give you a few. Cassandra Lewis at the time was a school teacher in charge of the Building Tenants Association. Now at this time, obviously she's retired, but she still lives in the building. She still lives in the neighborhood. And like other residents of the neighborhood, she recalls watching, you know, the transition of her block pretty much.
Yeah.
And she says that back in the 60s, everything was comfortable, you know, like the buildings were well kept. Everything had nice chandeliers. There was nice pretty rugs everywhere. The neighborhoods just didn't look like what they've turned out to look obviously now, right? It was much better well kept and what have you back in the 60s. Even though they were in the lower parts of town, you know, the more, I guess, what you would consider a hood parts, they were still pretty well kept. Because let me tell you what, there's parts of Harlem and shit that you would think that'd be like the boo-boos and look pretty nice. Like, I'm not gonna lie, my brother used to live in a building over there and... Sure, will look better than some of the places in the uppity parts.
Well, like... I'll tell you, I have a known person that lives in Orlando. Mm-hmm. She lives in Orlando downtown. Mm-hmm. And not her apartment in the inside, but the outside of her apartments kind of look like the projects. Mm-hmm. It's so ugly. And I'm like, bro, y'all, I'm supposed to be up the... They're townhomes, so they're condos or whatever. Oh, but, okay. And I'm just like, so, you know,
that's
sometimes...
That's why I tell people, I'm like, don't sleep. Orlando's pretty ratchet, but we're not here for that.
Not for that.
But Cassandra recalls that by the time the Jerry Curls moved in, things just weren't the same anymore. They're like, the rugs were gone, furniture was starting to disappear. So much so that the locks were even being taken off the building's front door. So pretty much, they really were just trying to be like, this is our shit. Make this as more convenient for us as possible. No keys, no nothing. We're just going to walk up in here. Okay?
Oh, Lord.
We finna walk up in here. Okay, so anyways. Where did I go? She said that she never personally had a problem with them herself. She always thought that they were very polite. Anytime that she needed help with the groceries or whatever, they were always there to help her. They never had a stink. They always minded their business. You know, as long as you didn't bother them, they didn't bother you, type of thing. Which cannot respect that.
Which is, you know, most gangs do that. Like, when they're in their neighborhood, yeah. They are good to the people. So when the cops come around asking for questions,
and nobody
you don't
them.
Say everybody nothing.
Everybody is tight lip.
You is quiet.
Well, remember that. Put a little.
Put a pin on that.
Yeah.
You.
There was another neighborhood resident who, at the time, same thing. She lived there for so many years, saw the whole transition from before they moved into the building and after. And she recalls now she's, well, at the time of the interview that I found, she was 85. So now she's probably resting. But she says that most of the buildings that she recalls that her neighborhood was a Jewish neighborhood, very clean, very well kept, you know, very quiet. And she herself was actually the first black family to move into this neighborhood.
Okay.
Wow.
So you can only imagine that was a very long time ago, because now this area is basically all Dominicans and blacks and Puerto Ricans.
Yeah.
But at the time, like she's discussing, this part of town was prominently Jewish. Where are my notes? So then she recalls the buildings back in the 90s. She said it was it's exactly like you would imagine living next to drug dealers. It was, you know, a lot of people coming in and out. There was always traffic, but they were very quiet. They never bothered anybody, nothing like that. However, you know, there is obviously restrictions when you live in projects or in high crime areas. Certain things like the parks, for instance, if you know, a lot of gangs take over parks, so some kids aren't allowed to go play at these parks, you know,
right.
Kid would, or whatever. So that was a very prominent thing. When the gang was around outside, children weren't allowed to play on the sidewalks. The elderly kind of got scared, so.
Yeah, regular gang shit.
No one really went outside. And again, this is testimonies from the people that live in the neighborhood. There was gunfire every now and then. Even you couldn't even use the phone booths because the phone booths were taken up pretty much by the drug dealers making up their drug deals, which obviously we know that. Some of the members were arrogant, told the residents, "We'll never leave here. There's nothing you could do about it." And basically were just pretty much schmucks, you know, gang schmucks at the end of the day. So that's how the people remembered the Jerry Curl gang up in their neighborhood. But let's talk about specifically the members of the gang.
Who were they?
Yes. We'll start with Rafael Martinez's little brother, Lorenzo. It was a hot summer day, July 2nd, 1991. I wasn't even born yet.
Mm. July 2nd? Nope, still not here yet.
Yeah, still here. The chica still did not exist.
I was soon to come. I was on the way. I was in the valley.
I was brewing.
I wasn't in there.
Not I.
I mean, me neither. I wasn't even thought of yet, but.
Yeah, I saw them oldies.
Babe, I just said I wasn't even thought of.
Oh. Oh, my God.
She's pointing at me.
Yeah, for real.
So Lorenzo was making his way to Queens to pick up some money from one of their stash houses and whatnot. And at this point in time in their business, they're pulling in about seven, Several million dollars a year in cocaine sales, which, again, this is early 90s. So think about it. The money is weighed a lot more back in the 90s. So if you're making several millions, I mean, by now, you'd be really, really rich.
Yeah, yeah. You
know what I'm saying? Especially in cocaine sales. And the Martinez brothers, which I love the fact that they are named Martinez brothers, because tell me how, not only is that my mama's last name, but my favorite DJ group is the Martinez
Brothers.
Oh, it
is.
Yeah.
It is.
What are the odds? But they're Puerto Rican. That's okay. So
I like them, though.
Huh?
I like them.
They're pretty stylish. And I hope y'all be listening at one point because I love you.
This shit is fire.
Okay. So they were living, at this point, again, they were making $7 million. They're living in Queens. Yes, they live in Queens. Business is running out of Manhattan. Just want to make that clarification here. It's a safe distance from the area where they worked. I mean, it's pretty true. Like, Manhattan and Queens are not that close from each other. They're not that far either, but
actually, I don't really know the distance.
They're the closest boroughs, I would say.
Okay.
But yeah, so he's heading over to the house to pick up some money. And after picking up the cash from the house, he's headed back to Manhattan. He's on the Triborough Bridge, which is a very cool bridge. It gives you some nice views. The police pull him over and search his car. By the way, though, I couldn't imagine being pulled over on a fucking bridge.
Oh, I know. Like, you know how they be telling you authorities. I'm trying to figure out. I'm trying. I can't even talk, but I'm trying to make sure they're not like... The law, they say as soon as the lights come on, you're supposed to pull over. But there's also a loophole because you're allowed to pull over when you feel safe to pull over.
Yes.
So if I don't feel safe till I get off this bridge, don't try to tell me I was avoiding the law.
But the thing is that this bridge, I don't feel safe on this bridge. Wrong. It's literally the only thing because, you've never been to New York, right?
Yeah, I have.
You have.
Is it like the Brooklyn Bridge long? Is it longer? I walked across the whole entire Brooklyn Bridge.
I don't think it's as long as the Brooklyn Bridge. It's pretty long though, but it's just the way it is because the way it's connecting each side.
Yeah.
It's not like there's much land around it. You're literally on the fucking water because New York is little islands connected by fucking bridges and subways. Well, that's literally what you're looking at. You're looking at two islands connected by metal.
Yeah.
Rinky old dinkity metal.
Back in the day,
back in the 90s.
Yeah. Me, I'm gonna stop all the way across the border in Mexico.
Meet me in Manhattan, off the exit.
Meet me in Mexico.
She said, I don't feel safe till I'm across the border. Thanks.
So the police pull him over, and they start to search his car. But like I stated before, these men were obviously kind of highly educated in some degree because even their cars were fucking trapdoored and booby-trapped. To get inside the car's secret compartment, which is where he carried all his stuff, you needed to...
All the goodies.
Oye esto. This is an elaborate process.
Okay.
You have to turn on the car lights, press the brake pedal, connect two points under the dashboard with the coin.
Okay.
And only then were the chambers unlocked to either side of the back seat.
Look at that.
But somehow, the police knew that.
Oh, snitches get stitches.
Oh, someone definitely told them.
So as they searched the car, they unboobied trapped it. And here's what they found in Lorenzo's car.
What they found.
$22,500 in cash.
Damn.
A loaded .45 caliber and a loaded .44 caliber.
Damn.
And 20 or so rounds of ammunition.
Woo. They was... Locked and loaded.
Which, if y'all know, I don't know about the gun laws back then in New York, but now having guns is completely illegal in the state of New York. So, if you get caught with some guns, you go to jail. You pay Rikers a visit. And I don't know if y'all heard about Rikers, but that's not the place you want to go.
Oh, yeah.
Rikers is not the place you want to go.
Yeah.
And that should probably be something we cover on here one day.
Yeah.
Maybe not with what's-his-name's case, because that case will forever make you want to cry.
Yeah.
But maybe just as a system as a whole.
Yeah, there's no way I could do that case.
No, I don't want to do that case either, because he should be alive, and he's not. So, we'll talk about that, but rest in peace, baby boo. So, anyways, Lorenzo was originally supposed to be heading back to the headquarters, which was now... located in a different part of the, it's the same spot. My bad, I got ahead of myself. So, they're heading, he's supposed to be headed to the headquarters, but he didn't make it, okay? So, at this point, we're going back to the neighborhood.
Okay.
And now Lorenzo's confiscated, or arrested. No one really knows where he's at, okay? But back in the neighborhood, everybody's getting all their stuff together, and they're getting ready to do some packaging and stuff at the warehouse.
Oh, they're gonna pack that thing up.
Excuse me. And on the way, hold on, I missed my spot. Okay, and on the way, Rafael and.
The other guy?
Yeah, the other guy, we're just minding their business, whatever. And, they came across this guy named Jose Reyes. Now, Jose Reyes was a retired social worker who lived on the fifth floor of one of their buildings. And he was not the type of dude to stay quiet. He was the one viejo that, like, you were, he wasn't fucking with what you were doing, he would tell you. And supposedly, a few months before Lorenzo's arrest on the bridge, Reyes had confronted several members of the gang.
Oh, wow.
Okay, this is back. I went a little back before present day. Not long after this argument, someone broke into his apartment and wrote a death threat on his wall and kind of like, you know, fucked up his apartment, whatever. Made it a point, basically, to shut the hell up and get out of our way, whatever. And basically, if you didn't, we're going to carry out the death threat, obviously.
Right.
Well, lo and behold, a few days later, on May 23rd, 1991, Reyes went out to run some errands on Broadway.
Oh, no.
Late in the afternoon, according to court documents, he walked out of a donut shop. Holy moly donut shop. Sorry.
Oh, my God. Donuts. I haven't had a donut in so long.
Oh, I need a donut.
Oh, my God. I used to, when I worked at my old job before the pandemic.
Fuck you, COVID.
You know, they used to bring freaking donuts all the time. And there would be, like, the little tiny mini donuts that be having, like, I mean, some of them were outrageous, but they be having, like, bacon on top or, like, Rice Krispies on top or, like, oh, caramel drizzle, little marshmallows on top. It'd be some good-ass donuts. It'd be, like, little mini ones, too, so.
I need them donuts.
It half makes you feel not too bad because you're eating probably 5,000 worth of sugar and calories in just still one little tiny donut. But they were fucking delicious.
Delicious.
Delicious, mm. Indeed. Delicious, indeed. Donuts.
It's been a long time.
Next time he comes to, you guys go to Orlando, I'll take you to Donut King. So
good. Oh, yes. Oh, Donut yes. King. That sounds like one here, I need though. To be.
Really?
Maybe I'm wrong.
Is it yellow and blue?
I don't know. But there's a donut, I think. Oh, that was a hole in one. Just get a donut hole or something. Nice. Disregard.
So he was walking out of the donut shop, began strolling down Broadway. As he passed a television store, a thin man in a striped polo shirt approached Reyes from behind and fired a single shot into the side of his head.
Oh, no.
Reyes God, fell to his death. After the murder of Reyes, the police began to heavily investigate the organization of the Jerry Curl Gang.
Dang.
So, at this point now, there was a rat, and the gang had to see with that. You know what I'm saying?
Figure out who the hell is snitching.
They had to go. Well, it was Reyes. So that's why he went. So, it looks like, putting two and two together, again, there's not that much research, but it looks like he's the reason why the cops knew that Lorenzo's car was trapped a certain type of way. Because remember, this was before Lorenzo gets arrested.
Oh, you did say that. Yeah, you're
so
right.
So this crime happens before Lorenzo got arrested, which means that after he gets shot, the investigation gets open and they're tailing Lorenzo.
Yeah.
And that's makes how they sense. Figured out. They figured out that his car, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So now, present day, investigation's full force. And we have Officer Gilmore.
Mm.
Or Detective Gilmore, whatever the fuck. He's a muscular 6-footer. He's the son of another cop, so the cop force runs in his family. He has walked 8-block section of Washington Heights for 5 of his 6 years on the force. So he's pretty much very well known.
He knows the hood.
Of the hood, right, right. If you don't know Washington Heights, it is the hood.
I don't even know if it's Manhattan. The hood. I was trying to say, like, no, the neighborhood. Is. Okay, Washington I don't want anybody Heights, to come for me.
Washington Heights is a hood part of Manhattan. It's definitely the most well-known part for, like, Dominicans to be living there.
Oh, okay, so he knew the, he knew el barrio. Yeah. He knew what the hood.
Well, you know, like, the movie In the Heights?
Oh, my God, out? Yes.
That is not an actual depiction of the movie, oh. Of the area, just letting you know. But that movie is supposed to be said about this area.
Oh.
In the Heights, Washington Heights, but it doesn't, it's not a proper representation.
Makes sense.
I really like that movie though.
I like the movie for what it is.
Yeah.
The musical.
Oh my
whatever.
God, the musical part and aspect
Manuel,
of it.
You know, I feel you. Yes, thank you for putting our people on the map. Pero like, next time cast people that are actually from the countries you're trying to represent.
They were not. I didn't look into that. They were not.
Look. I believe that the movie should have been how culturally diverse as it was, yes.
Yeah.
Because we all represent all of our, you know, Latino community.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to have a Mexican playing a Dominican, I'm going to have an issue with that.
Oh, that's how I feel about fucking Colombiana. Like, she's not Colombian.
Oh, Zoe Saldana?
Yeah.
Yeah, but she did a really good job. But I feel
like... No, it's a good-ass movie.
She's not Colombian at all. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like...
So,
because there's definitely other Colombian actresses out there you could have casted.
But, you know, I don't know. It's fucking industry, but I just...
And I get whatever. It. You know, not everybody can play the roles
the part.
Properly.
Right.
But find somebody who can, because proper representation is important.
Yeah.
If you're going to do it, absolutely. You know what I'm saying?
And you just got to look. There's, you know, there are actors and actresses from every country.
Of course. So Officer Gilmore is on the scene or on the investigation. He is one of 30 beat cops in the precinct, and he is about 1,150 officers who walk the city, you know, throughout the day to quote unquote prevent crime. He's a part of the 34th precinct, leads in the city the homicides with 111 so far of that year that we were talking about. So 1991, there was already up in July 2nd, or up to this point of the summer, there was 111 homicides.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Many of them were drug related. It also leads in drug arrests with 3,397 drug arrests in the last year at this time. So Gilmore and his people started, you know, really setting up a case against the Jerry Crow gangs. And they were really doing all sorts of craziness with all these allegations such as murder, assault, drug trafficking. They also issued tickets for littering, loitering, and trespassing. And they were told
they was coming after them for any and everything.
For anything, to try to pin them. They even towed the gang's cars for double parking, which obviously you can't double park in New York. We all know that.
But we know why they did it.
Of course. So, this is a quote from him directly. He's like, "I'd really harass them a lot," he said. "If I arrested them and they started mouthing off, I would come down there and stay in front of their building for 5 or 6 hours. I think their leader told them that when I came to clear out, I think their leader told them when I came to clear out because it would take away from their business." Mm-hmm. So, essentially, like, my man's was obviously targeting them. His determination... He says that his determination helped him reduce drug trafficking and win the confidence of the residents and the merchants that helped him.
Wow.
Which means what? That obviously there was some people that were ratting.
Yeah.
He also got tips from rival drug dealers who feared the gang.
Okay.
Because the Jerry Curls responded with everything with death threats.
Everybody
started becoming a 6'9", pretty much.
I mean, if you fucking shoot me on my kneecap because I tell you, you limpy, I'm sure that is
correct.
Your only way of
correct
solving issues.
You failed, obviously, keeping your people in line because you shot one, so there's that. So, after all of this started taking place... the police started to come to the actual building at 6:14 at this point because... Oh, I forgot to mention this. My bad. Because after everything started happening, once Reyes got shot, they moved their operation to a different building. Damn. to lessen off the steam.
Mm-hmm.
So when the police got word of that and showed up to the building, the new building, they started asking mad people questions, but no one wanted to start talking because look at everything that had already happened. So, at that point, there was a deep silence between the residents and the police basically had to find other ways to pin this crime on the Jerry Crow gang. Because that's essentially what they were trying to do, was now that Reyes was dead, Lorenzo was already arrested, now they were trying to find ways to get Martina and Rafael and everybody else to just clean them out. Well, no one was ever convicted of the crime. Two members that were arrested and tried were acquitted of it. So, in October 1991, now this is the end of the year, Rafael Martinez and his brothers and other members were then arrested for multiple charges stemming from cocaine business.
Mm.
And this is now coming from the rival gangs that were starting to snitch and get them out. Because they were doing so well in the business that they were taking everybody's shit.
Yeah, so they're like, well, now it's time for us to take back the block.
Right. People already hate you, so now it's our turn to kind of just finish the job.
Yeah.
So many received stiff sentences, including Rafael Martinez, whose convictions added up to 213 years in prison.
Damn.
The successful crackdown against the Jerry Curls was a part of a larger effort in New York City to arrest and prosecute violent Dominican gangs that ultimately extended to the crews like the Wild Cowboys and the Young Talented Children, which I do say, I will say that we will learn about them furthermore because I have already started to cover them.
Yes.
So, we will get to know about the rest of the Dominican-affiliated gangs in New York. Because there's Wild Cowboys, the Young Talents and Children, there's Dominicans Don't Play, which is funny.
That's so funny.
And the Trinitarios.
Okay. Looking forward to that.
I think that was a... if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, so... So they arrested the brothers, the 20 other drug members, or excuse me, the gang members.
Who were also dealing in drugs, so yeah, facts. Same difference.
So all of this, this whole indictment came down from the investigation that James Gilmore made against the gang. He also included large members of the task force of the High-Intensity Drug Trafficking Area Task Force, a tag team effort between the NYPD and the district attorney's office.
Yeah, they're like, okay, let's
do
this.
So they definitely, like, gang together to
take him down.
To take him down, right. So... here we are at the trial. Sorry, kind of lost myself there. And it was said that during the trial, the Jerry Curl gang kind of became unraveled. Everybody started testifying against each other and basically started pointing fingers at each other.
Yeah, of course.
The assistant district attorney, Fernando Camacho, had little trouble convincing the jury of their guilt. And Judge Leslie Crocker Snyder, who later ran against for the DA, so he definitely was trying to stick these people because he was about to become DA, had trouble handing out such a stiff sentence. The murder of Jose Reyes, however, never resulted in a conviction, like I said.
Oh, no.
They were acquitted. And so they walked off. And now he's saying that basically he thinks the cop is saying that he is proud of the work that he did because now he looks back and he had part of cleaning up the streets.
Right.
But yeah, pretty much they are all still serving sentences for all of their crimes. And I did the math. Rafael Martinez would now be 53.
Damn,
Lorenzo is 48 and Cesar is 54.
Okay. They are young.
Let me see.
Yeah, kids, don't do drugs. Don't buy drugs. Don't sell drugs.
So, yeah, so basically, I mean, there's a whole bunch of... I had more notes here on, like, what happened during their trial or whatever, but it was basically the district attorney basically saying that they would never have any sort of a bond or anything like that because of such of horrendous crimes.
Right.
And...
they're like, we're trying to make sure they never get out.
The defense attorney was basically saying that because of so many years of them being in jail and good behavior, because they've never caused issues, like they've never been in fights in jail. There's no reports of them being a threat to society, basically. So she was trying to get them appealed,
right,
for a lesser sentence and possibly getting them out. And the attorney goes, he could create the cure for cancer in his cell. He's like, he's still not going to get out.
Oh, I know.
I was like, hey, el diablo.
They don't give a fuck.
He definitely, Rafael Martinez, is serving his 213-year sentence in prison, and he will stay there. And I'm not sure what prison. I'm going to assume in Rikers, but I could not find where they held any of them because the information was just so old. But I want to do a follow-up. I think next time I go to New York, I'm going to see if I can find, like, the museum of the city of Manhattan. And see if I can find, like, more information on them.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And do a follow-up. Because I wish I would have known about them before my last trip just then. But I actually was just told about this through my friend Chris. Shout out to you if you're listening, Chris. Thank you for the idea.
Shout out.
he told me about them. And then I was like, fuck, too late. But I'll do a follow-up if I can find more cool information or even just pictures or whatever. I'll definitely post the follow-up content. But...
that was good.
That is my case on the Jerry Curl game.
That was a good case. Yes.
Nice.
Good job. Nice.
Thank you very much.
Don't do drugs. Don't sell drugs. Don't buy drugs, guys.
Yeah, just don't. Cocaine is one hell of a drug, okay?
Yeah, that's like a different kind of drug.
That's a different beast.
I'm okay with one drug, not these kind of drugs.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it's alcohol for me.
These drugs is fucking another
wild
type of shit. Yeah, like, what?
But yeah, stay tuned. Come back for more of Dominican Gangs. We will.
I know. I'm trying to hear about
the Wild Cowboys.
What's the one?
Dominicans don't play.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's gonna be interesting. Yeah. We'll come back to that one. But
DDP.
Definitely. Stay tuned for more. And if you have any other gangs you want us to cover, let us know.
Oh my gosh.
I'm staying away from gangs.
Like, I was going to say, yeah. I don't think I can.
Not like gangs that are still active. I'm talking about like old gangs.
No, but I just, you know, that's fine. I'm here to.
I feel like I'm so. With the. By now. But with Griselda, I got real close to organized crime / gangish.
Yeah, no, and, I will. If it's anything that's still active, shit. I'm not going to talk about it, obviously, because we know
more. I ain't trying to.
But if y'all inactive and y'all all in jail, I'm good for you.
Bye. Yeah. I mean that part.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
But anyways, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to La Chicas del Crime. We hope you join us next time for another episode full of crime y chisme. Give us a follow on all our socials, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, which we will list in the description of the episode. Please also rate our show and leave us a review as this helps bring awareness to our podcast. We appreciate it. Gracias.
Hey guys, it's Osa.
It's Jen.
And we're here to deliver a message to you guys.
Yes. So today we have a quick message from Kat. As you know, she is one of three of Las Chicas del Crime. Kat would like to share a message with you guys. So we are here relaying it on the podcast, but you will see it through her own words on Instagram. But we know not everybody follows us on Instagram. So we wanted to give you a verbal edition of the message that Kat wants us to speak on or relay, should I say. So here it goes. Hola, chicos y chicas. Kat here. I've made the tough decision to temporarily take a step back from the podcast. Osa and Jen will continue to keep Las Chicas del Crime running. New episodes on Thursdays, just like it's always been. As much as I've loved creating this podcast and as fun as the journey has been alongside the two of the best co-hosts, amigas, there are some personal things in my life I need to handle, sort out, and take care of. I am beyond grateful to be able to do this with the support of Jen and Osa. I have loved so much connecting with them, with so many of you, both listeners and fellow true crime community and friends. I appreciate all the love and support you continue to give us. I look forward to getting back to the podcast when I'm able to give it my best again. New episode this Thursday. Love, Kat.
So this will be our last episode with Kat this week, and then it'll just be Jen and I. Kat is a huge asset to us. It's a huge help. Now, she's hella talented, so we are, you know, we're kind of taking a big L, but she comes first, and we're just going to, you know, work through it, and just please be patient with us, because we're, you know, it's just going to be two, and you know, just bear with us, and thank you for all the support, and show Kat much love.
Yep. As always, thank you guys for being here, for listening and supporting us. As Osa said, things will be a little bit different because our third leg is gone for a little while, but we're here to support her. We love her, and her health comes first, as we would expect any of you guys to always take care of yourselves first. So we are signing out. We will be still with you guys every Thursday. But yeah. Bye.
Thank you.